Welcome back to our third installment of NASS podcast on equity, diversity, and inclusion within school psychology. I am Shayla Desai, the NASS Director of Educational Practice. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm honored to be the host of this series. This episode will focus on graduate preparation from the perspective of current school psychology graduate students. Today, I am joined by guests Tiffany Lee, AJ Asemi-Adem, and Jerrica Knox, who I would like to welcome now. Tiffany, AJ, and Jerrica, can you please share a little bit about your current role and anything you're comfortable sharing about your identities, including areas of intersectionality? Tiffany, let's start with you.
Hi, everyone. I am a Korean American student in a specialist program at George Mason University, and I am currently finishing my internship. And I'm super excited to start working as, you know, a practicing school psychologist in a couple months.
Thank you. Jerrica, why don't you go next?
All right. Hi, everyone. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I am a rising fifth year doctoral student in the school psychology program at NC State University. I identify as a Black woman and a first generation college student.
Awesome, thanks. And AJ?
Hi, everyone. My name is AJ, and I am a rising fourth year. I'm Ghanaian, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. Excited to be here.
Thank you all. So I'm hoping to start today's episode hearing from each of you about how you decided to pursue school psychology and what drew you to the field. AJ, do you want to start this time?
Sure, I can. So when I got these questions, I was just thinking, I was really naive when I was coming into this, because all I knew was that I had done my master's in clinical psychology, but then I wanted to be able to marry like psychology and literacy, because my interest is in reading motivation and writing motivation. And then I was in this other program and a professor there told me about school psych. And so I went and talked to a current faculty in our program. And when he told me about school psych, I was like, wait, that's what I've been trying to do this whole time. Because I had like, you know, just done clinical and been thinking about developmental, but no one had ever said school psych. So that's kind of what drew me into it, just the thought that I could marry both psychology and literacy and understand why kids struggle with reading and writing.
Interesting. Thank you. Jerrica, I'll pass to you next.
Yeah, the same for me, actually, in terms of just discovering school psychology. I went straight from undergrad to my doctoral program, and I didn't know about school psychology up until I was looking at graduate programs. I knew coming into undergrad that I wanted to go to grad school. I had no idea how to get there, but I knew I needed to do research and work with children because I was interested in working with kids. And from those experiences, I realized that I really wanted to figure out how to utilize the school in the school context to be able to increase resilience in both ethnic minority children and children who have experienced trauma. And so as I was writing my personal statements, I actually came across school psychology and I'm like, wow, that's actually exactly what I want to do. So it kind of just sprung up on me, luckily.
Sounds like that's pretty common experience. Tiffany, how about you?
So like the two of you, I did not know about the field until a couple years after graduating college. And I feel like it's becoming a more, you know, known field, you know, these like recently, but I study psychology in undergrad, and I feel like with a bachelor's in psychology, you really can't do much in the psychology field or, you know, related jobs. And so I jumped into ABA, at first not knowing what it was. I did some work in ABA, and then I worked at a private school as like a program director. I loved working with families and students and all the teachers, but I just felt like I didn't have anything that like really like quantified my job, or I didn't really have any training. And so that's when I started looking for graduate programs, and I was like, oh my gosh, I did not know school psychology existed. And I felt like that was like a combination of the things that I enjoy doing, the things that I was good at. And so that's how I kind of found the field a couple years after I graduated.
Great, thanks for sharing. Tiffany, I'll let you continue. I'm curious also, what were some specific things that you were looking for when you were selecting school psychology graduate programs to apply to and then select finally? You know, what was attractive to you about certain programs, and what were some of the things that you were trying to avoid in programs?
Sure. I guess just to start off, like, location was important to me. Like, I wanted to stay near home and just be where I was comfortable, just like convenience and also money. You know, tuition is very expensive. So just looking at the convenience factor. And then, so I'm from the Northern Virginia area. But aside from those things, I really wanted to gain a lot of good hands-on experience, since I am pursuing a specialist degree and I'm hoping to work in schools. And so the hands-on training was really, really important, and supportive staff.
Great, thank you. Jerrica, how about you?
I think my biggest thing was location, and now I'm sad to hear that, because location is definitely not as big as a factor now, but just being a first-gen student, I really wanted to stay close to home because navigating such a new territory was scary to me, and so location was a big thing for me. My advisor, and of course, like, their research interests, and also the demographic information for the rest of the faculty. And that's really based on race and gender. So I avoided places where it was purely white and mostly male because I felt like I wouldn't be comfortable. And then funding as well. So if there was one thing that I learned in my Ronald E. McNair program, it was a research program in undergrad, it was that I should not pay for my doctoral program. So I absolutely looked for stuff where, or looked for schools where funding was included.
That makes sense. And AJ, how about you?
Yeah, so these two questions are why I said I was naive when I was looking for grad school. So at the time I found school psych, I was in a different program, like a different PhD program. And at the time I was just looking for one, a program where I could marry these two interests, because I was really focused on what my interests were. And I didn't think about the important things that you should think about, right? Like how is this gonna be paid for? Because at the time I thought I had an assistantship. So I think things like, you know, like funding and just interests of faculty and stuff like that are definitely things that should have been looked at. But it was like, oh, I want to do reading and psychology, and I can do reading and psychology here. Awesome. I'm going to do it. And it's been great. Like, I love my program. But I think what sold me ultimately was like the faculty that I met in the interviews. Because they were so like warm, and it was so kind, as opposed to like the programs I was already in, where I felt like I was just floating along and nobody knew or cared who I was. So just that contrast was what ultimately sold me and made me choose to come into my current program.
I think that's a really good point. Like, I'm a strong believer of you don't know what you don't know. So sometimes when you are looking for programs, you're not looking at some of the things that are probably important. And so just thinking back to, you know, applying to graduate schools, I think one thing that I should have looked into a little bit more is community in the program, as in, is there a competitive nature among the students, for an example, or is there collaborative work between the labs? Are students being celebrated by the entire program when they're meeting milestones? I think that community is such an important piece, especially when you are in graduate school and you're doing a lot of work and you're tired and you really need support around you. So I think that community is something I would have honed in a little bit more on.
That makes a lot of sense. AJ, I wanted to follow up with you about your unique experiences being an international student in your program. And I'm curious what was most helpful to you during the process of applying, and it sounds like also changing programs. I can only imagine that had some other obstacles involved. So if you wanted to share some about how that went for you and any advice you might offer to other international students in your position.
So I know people won't be able to see this, so I just want to say, like, I'm holding in a laugh because it's been such, like, I can't believe that I'm here. But I want to say coming into school psychology was a shock. Like, I went in full steam being very excited because when I'm passionate about something, I dive in. I'm a naturally cautious person, but when someone, you know, like you get gut feeling and you're like, oh, this is the thing for me. And in those instances, I dive in. But it was a real shock in the sense that I remember, like, within the first month telling my mom, like, I think this program is for rich people, because I found out that I needed to have a car and I needed to find 6 kids to practice assessments on and all of that stuff. Like, I had people in my program who could go home or knew people whose kids that they could use. And I was international and I knew no one. But also, like, with needing a car, like, lots of banks won't give loans to international students, and you can't even, like, get a credit card, like, initially. Like, there's a few that would give, you know, so there's just all those logistic details. But, like, when you're the only international student, it feels weird to bring that up and to say, hey, like, one, I don't have a car, so going to practicum is a challenge. Like, I remember having to pay like $20 in and $20 back for an Uber the twice a week that I had to go to practicum because no buses went where my practicum was located. And then the next semester, I was like, oh, if you don't have a car, you can't do practicum because all of it is kind of external. So it's not like things like anybody knew about, because obviously there's very few international students. So it's not like people are aware and like, oh my God, you're still going to have to do it. But it's more nobody knew about it so that they could be like, hey, here's what to expect. And so it was kind of a shock. And then also very quickly, I had a child be racist to me during a practice assessment. And so I was like, whew, like, you know, the blows just keep coming. So it was a very interesting first semester. But yeah, I remember talking to my mom and saying, I think this program is for rich people. That was my first impression of school psych, like, just the, you know, the books we needed and the car and all that stuff. Just, yeah.
Yeah, it adds up and it's a big investment. I totally understand that. And I cannot imagine being in your shoes and having to try to navigate that by yourself. And you're absolutely right. I'm sure well-meaning faculty just weren't aware of some of the obstacles that you were facing to know, like, to reach out to you and provide some insight or some resources. So I can only imagine that that was really, really challenging. Thank you for sharing that. So moving on and thinking from an equity, diversity, inclusion perspective, granted that's what this podcast series is all about, I'm wondering if you can share some things about your experiences or your sense of common experiences of other students from minoritized backgrounds who are students in school psychology. And a brief disclaimer, I am of course not asking you to represent all people who share your identity or all women of color or all students. So just know that I'm asking you to speak to your own experiences and what you know. So primarily, I'm curious what it might be like for any of you to feel like you're the only in your cohort or in your program or at your field placement, or perhaps you're one of few people who come from a minoritized background in those settings, and how that's kind of shaped your graduate preparation. Tiffany, do you want to start?
Sure. So for my program, I would say our student body, like our cohorts, are pretty diverse, but they're still small. And so I still felt like you know, an only or like one of very few. And there were definitely times when I like felt the pressure to represent my, I guess, ethnicity, my background, not just being Korean American, but like being Korean or being Asian. And I feel like there's so many Asian people in the world. And for me to represent them, sometimes it did feel like a burden. And there were times where I felt like, I also felt like there were like a lot of teaching moments that came up in grad school or practicum. And sometimes it kind of made me feel like I was taken aback and I didn't really know how to respond at times. Either people said things that were not appropriate. And sometimes, you know, it would be little kids. Like I would be in practicum at an elementary school and they would say things probably because like they haven't experienced certain things or like they just didn't know. And like through those experiences, like now I've learned how to make them, you know, a good teaching moment. But that's definitely taken time.
Sure. Jerrica or AJ, do you want to share next?
I can. So if I'm honest, exhausting, because like Tiffany said, I don't feel pressure to represent all Black people so much as I feel a personal responsibility for good or bad to make things better than people that come after me, which means being vocal about my experiences as an international student, being vocal about my experiences as a Black woman, and talking about how what that's like for me being in the program, so that because I know that faculty are well-meaning and I'm hoping that by sharing my experiences, it can make things better for the next cohort. It's hard to say, obviously, when you're still so close to it. But yeah, so it's kind of exhausting because of that feeling like you must always speak up. And I feel like I've joked more than one time, like I'm exhausted from speaking up. But you know, it's one of those things.
That's totally fair.
Yeah, I share the same sentiment. I always feel like I need to speak up because I'm thinking of the people who are going to come after me. And maybe that's just like my own attribute, like always thinking of others who are coming after, but I just always feel like I need to make things better for other people. And so that has actually resulted in a lot of exhaustion, and I've put myself in places where I have felt uncomfortable for the benefit of other people. And that's rough. That's very rough. But fortunately, I do have other people in my program who share similar identities as me. And so I've been able to receive that support from them. And so sometimes I actually don't feel like the only, although I feel like us together is an only, but at least we have each other. But yeah, it's hard when you're wanting to do good for the benefit of other people, but you just have to put yourself out there for the bullets, essentially. And so you're getting attacked or you're just feeling a lot of pressure, and there's just a lot of negative things that come with trying to do good.
Yeah, it sounds like not only is there a burden with feeling like you have this added weight and this added responsibility, but to me, it sounds like it almost puts you in a more vulnerable place while you're already going through a really challenging experience of trying to get a graduate degree and to have this kind of extra stuff weighing over you. Must be incredibly hard. I'm also wondering, Jerrica, you talked a little bit about some supports that have been helpful. Are there other things, Tiffany or AJ, that you've experienced that have maybe kind of helped to make this aspect of your training a little better?
Yeah, so I think definitely having supportive faculty is a big one. just feeling like you can say stuff, because as bad as it feels to constantly have to say stuff, I try to imagine what it would feel like if I didn't feel I could say things, and that feels even worse. So having the space to say things is definitely, has definitely been really helpful. And also faculty who kind of go out their way and like check in and be like, AJ, how's it going with XYZ? And just knowing that you're not just a number, but like people actually know who you are. And if something happened to you, like there'll be people who would notice. I feel like that helps a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to start off by saying, like being able to speak up is very brave and courageous. And there are many times when I kind of sit back because it's scary and very uncomfortable. And especially like feeling like the only, like being afraid that no one's going to understand what I'm saying, or they're going to take it the wrong way. I think that's very brave. And yeah, there are definitely many times when I just sit back and I'm like, I have so many thoughts, but it takes a lot. Support-wise, I think kind of similar to what AJ said, having like a mentor, like in the field or your program who has like shared experiences, I think that's very helpful. And then finding peers that you can, you know, talk to, share experiences and get support from, that's very helpful.
Thank you all for sharing. Have any of you been able to have some unique experiences to supplement your graduate training, such as like leadership positions or engaging in advocacy and activism? And if so, how has that contributed to your graduate school experience?
I can take this one just because I feel like I've had such like an amazing experience in my program, just regarding those kinds of things. So I will start by saying the year before, before COVID, I and my, like someone in my cohort were the co-presidents for SASP in the program. I mean, there's only three people in my cohort, but still. but also beyond that, I feel, so this year, I and some people in my program started a journal for students in school psych, which I saw an email from Dave earlier today saying we could open it up, and absolutely yes. So I guess this is me plugging that. But so in my previous program, I had said, I've always wanted to start a journal for students, and that was met with kind of thing. Whereas in this program, when I was like, I think I want to start a journal for students, it was like, yeah, let's do it. And how can we make this happen? And so I think having that space in my program has been so amazing, because like I was able to find like-minded people who were like, yeah, we think we should have a journal, and like we're currently accepting submissions and we're going to have an issue soon. And it's like crazy to even think about that. It's like I'm part of something like that. And that's all been made possible by being in the program that I'm in.
That's awesome. Jerrica, Tiffany?
Yeah. So my first advocacy sort of experience was in my first year, I think. In my practicum, Lee Coquinas was my advisor or supervisor at the time, and she was super into advocating for school psychologists in North Carolina. So she actually influenced my decision to join the board for North Carolina School Psychology Association. And from there, I had a chance to meet with legislators and talk to them about increasing budgets for school psychologists in North Carolina. And I was very nervous to do that. Very nervous to meet these very big name people and not know what to say, but it was a great opportunity for me to realize that I can actually do that. And it felt good to be able to know that as a school psychologist, I do have these skills to be able to advocate for others. And then in my third year or last year, other students and I in my program started a social justice task force in response to a racial incident and just addressing things within the program climate. And from there, of course, we were advocating for lots of different things for students to essentially feel comfortable in their courses, for students to feel comfortable within the program with other faculty, for us to be able to come out of this program as culturally responsive clinicians and researchers. And so that has also been a time where I didn't feel like I was the right person for the job. I didn't feel like, you know, I could actually, you know, speak up and that sort of thing. But just thinking back now, it felt really good to do that. And it feels really good to do that and to see that we actually have made a lot of changes because of that task force. And so even now, just these experiences that I've had have kind of led me to thinking about systems level change and what I would want to do in policy work in the future. And that's something that I had never thought about before those experiences. So
that's great. Thank you. Tiffany, anything you want to add?
For me, I guess I haven't had like too many opportunities, but I know about a year ago, I posted on the NASP message board, and I was curious about, you know, any resources, you know, supporting the AAPI community during the coronavirus outbreak, because there was a lot of stuff going on in schools and our communities, and they responded right away. I was very encouraged, and all those resources were created, and I know right now we're also creating resources to support the community, you know, because of current events. And so I do appreciate the urgency and the responses. I guess outside of that, I do have a very, very small YouTube channel, and you know, I'm just sharing my journey, talking about school psychology, graduate school, giving advice. And through that, I've really been able to meet so many different people who are interested in the field, who are currently in the field. And I guess like from a diversity lens, I would love to see more diversity in the field, more diversity in leadership in school psychology. And I think I'm starting to see more of that, and people are more encouraged, you know, seeing other people of color in school psychology and education. You know, I bring on a ton of different like school psychologists to interview. Charles Barrett is one of them, Byron McClure, and a couple other people. So you guys should definitely check it out.
Oh, that's great. And that's a perfect segue to the last question I wanted to ask. As you pointed out, Tiffany, NASP and you know, the school psychology field at large are making efforts to have a stronger and more visible commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So what are some of your recommendations in this regard when it comes to supporting graduate students? And what do you hope will change in the future to make the field more welcoming and inclusive to all? AJ, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure, I can. So I think I feel like being an international student and being a Black woman, and there's just so many layers there. And the thing with being an international student from what is referred to as a third world country by others, is that that places you in so many minoritized identities, but that's often not recognized. And so what happens is, for example, in school psych, we tend to use lots of assessments that require standardization, and which is amazing to me because America is a country with lots of different accents. And so the idea that there would be one way for the person doing the test to pronounce things still baffles me. But so there's this emphasis on saying things right or wrong, right? Because if I'm evaluated negatively for my accent, that's saying that the way that I say things is wrong. And so I think my advice would be to shine the diversity, equity, and inclusion lens within programs, because I feel like lots of our efforts as school psychologists are like, oh, how can we do diversity and inclusion within like the schools that we work in the communities? But I'm like, the graduate students in the program also need your diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like when you're making policies for where to go to for practicum or stuff like that, it's a good idea to think, how is this affecting students in the program in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion? Who is getting like funding? That kind of stuff is very important too. And then just as a field, just for cultural competence, for advisors and supervisors, like being more informed about what it means to bring in an international student, because there's so much that we have to navigate. And if we, on top of that, have to educate the people who are educating us, that's like another whole layer of like exhaustion that I don't know that everyone has the cognitive capacity for. So that would be my advice, just being more informed as educators of the circumstances around and the people who we're bringing in. Like, what are the policies for international students? For example, we cannot work outside of campus. We can only work on campus. What does that mean if we don't find a job on campus? Do we then not get funded for the program? You know, stuff like that is very important to think about. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Tiffany, what are your thoughts?
For grad programs, I guess just to create like an open and safe space for those like uncomfortable discussions, and to have like a safe space to like call each other out. You know, it's supposed to be a cohort, a good community where you learn from each other. And so for the programs, to create that kind of space for students, and for the field, just more representation would be awesome. And for students to see, you know, all kinds of people in this role.
Thank you. And Jerrica?
Yeah, so I think it would be great for NASP to be able to provide more resources for faculty and trainers in school psychology on how to support diverse students coming into their program, as AJ said, to be able to support them. And so understanding the challenges that they may have so that you can address them when they do come up. I'm also thinking of more resources for how to train culturally competent students. And so making sure that we don't have this one multicultural class and that's the end all be all to diversity, equity, and inclusion, but making sure that we are integrating those conversations into everything we do, whether it's assessment or intervention or consultation, whatever else. And not only just being culturally competent practitioners, but researchers as well. And so really encouraging students to think about implications for their studies and how they relate to different people. Because we are school psychologists who are practitioners, but we are also researchers too. And that's what practitioners base their practices off of, so.
Yes, thank you. So Jerrica, Tiffany, and AJ, I so appreciate the time that you spent today, also for being so honest and open about your journeys in school psychology. I think it's so important that we listen to our current graduate students to improve the field, and the future is bright. Talking to the three of you, I know we're in good hands. So for everyone listening, thanks for joining us and taking an interest in these critical issues. We look forward to the rest of the series and hope you'll tune in for the next episode. For more information on EDI topics and social justice, please check out the NASP website. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.